Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Welcome to our book pick segment, and we are thrilled to have two incredible booksellers with us. We are just so blessed to have these amazing humans who operate and work in and run these independent bookstores throughout our region. Today we have picked two of them to come in and to talk to us and to give us our book picks for the week. We welcome Kira Weisner from Merritt Bookstore in Millbrook, New York. Hello, Kira. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm always so happy to be here.
It's a thrill to have you here. Thanks so much for coming in. We also welcome Lily Bartels from Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady, New York. Hello, Lily.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine.
Great.
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. All right. Kara, let's start with you.
All right. Let's start with our second first edition pick for the year and our first novel. It's called Peggy. It's by Rebecca Godfrey, and it says on the cover, with Leslie Jameson. And it's because Rebecca Godfrey unfortunately passed away before she had a chance to finish this book. This is a novel, but it's all about the life of Peggy Guggenheim. So again, what I feel like we're seeing a lot of this now, where a lot of the facts are really true, but this imagining what happened in these conversations between people and behind the scenes, which, you know, you've seen before, but I feel like things are riding a little bit closer to the truth these days for some of these books. It is paced well. It takes us through the life of this woman who learned to appreciate art, who is from this very rich, interesting family, but who had a very kind of sort of complicated childhood. And just every page is filled with people and ideas and love and loss and anger and just so many emotions that go into making a life. And it's beautifully written out for this in this novel.
Peggy, a novel by Rebecca Godfrey with Leslie Jameson. All right, Lily.
I'm going to start with nonfiction, and this one's called Dinosaurs at the Dinner Party, How an Eccentric Group of Victorians Discovered Prehistoric Creatures and Accidentally Upended the World. So I found this book really engrossing and compelling, and it does have a very unconventional cast of characters. This is by Edward Dolnick, and it is, I would call it a historical adventure that introduces us to this group of eccentric Victorians who first accidentally discovered dinosaur bones, and then how the paleontologists of the early 1800s sort of had to puzzle their way through this fossil record to create the narrative of dinosaurs that we know today. This led to like a whole new understanding of human history. So in the early 1800s, a 12-year-old farm boy right over here in South Hadley, Massachusetts, while he was plowing his dad's field, he discovered these enormous, like dinner plate size, three-toed footprints that they are the first known dinosaur tracks that were ever discovered. And not long after that, this group of Victorians accidentally discovered dinosaur bones, these enormous bones that no one had ever seen anything like them. And no one had ever imagined creatures this enormous and that had once existed, let alone the fact that they existed hundreds of millions of years ago, let alone the fact that they all suddenly disappeared. So that was a really startling thing for humanity to learn. So these discoveries sort of blindsided the world and shattered people's notions of where humans stood in the history of life. And it also talks about how we eventually incorporated this kind of stunning new knowledge into our understanding of the world and our place in it. It's a brilliant book that reads like an adventure story.
Oh my God, I love that.
That sounds really, really good. Dinosaurs at the Dinner Party by
Edward Dolnick.
Edward Dolnick. Is there an extra E in there? Edward? Well, it doesn't matter. Edward Dolnick is the name of the author, and the new book is Dinosaurs at the Dinner Party. All right, Kara, next up.
All right, let's pick up on the 12-year-old boy finding things.
All right.
And we will meet Milo, who is the main character in All the Ways to Go, which is a new book by Jesse Janowitz. I feel like this book is perfect for that kind of sort of 10-ish, 11-ish, 12-ish, 13-ish person, but also I thoroughly enjoyed it as a grown-up. So it tells the story of Milo and his mom, and Milo has been a chess prodigy and is really struggling with what that means as he gets older and is not necessarily wants to be seen that way and defined that way by himself, his family, and the world. And so as he's going through figuring out what to do with this, he and his mom leave their apartment in the city and spend the summer with like another mom and their child. And so Milo makes a friend and learns to live in a new house, and there are animals and like a very funny cat. And the game of Go is introduced in this book. So they're in Princeton, and so there's perfect opportunities for, you know, like physics students and like mathematicians and things like that to like drop in and have opinions about stuff. And I have seen Go. I know what Go is, but and I've read about some of the AI Go, like things like that. I feel like Go is the oldest, actually. It is the oldest game. And it's just woven in and introduced in this book in a way with, again, I feel like all books are about the same thing, right? They're about like growing and changing and learning who you are and seeing who you are up against other people and seeing other people against you and how everything, it's great. It reads super well. And Jesse's going to come to the farmer's market with us on Saturday or the store if it's raining. And we're going to play Go and have really fun things and little cat toys and... It's just going to be fantastic.
Now with cat toys. The event is on the 31st at the Farmers Market, either inside or outside. All the ways to go by Jesse Janowitz. All right, Lily.
The Future Was Now, Mad Men, Mavericks, and the Epic Sci-Fi Summer of 1982 by Chris Nashawaty. Okay, in the summer of 1982, there were 8 science fiction films released within 6 weeks of one another, and they were E.T., Tron, Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, Conan the Barbarian, Blade Runner, Poltergeist the Thing, and Mad Max the Road Warrior. So this was an explosion of cinema that just upended the art and the business of movie making forever, and it also changed the careers of some of Hollywood's biggest names. So 5 years earlier in 1977, as we all know, George Lucas unleashed Star Wars on the world, which was not only a global phenomenon, but it was a cultural shift that would last forever. And at that point, the heads of studios were sort of scrambling to get their piece of this pie, this new pie, the sci-fi pie, if you will. And they were beginning to grasp the potential of these high-concept movies with these obsessive fan bases, not to mention the lucrative merchandising and, of course, the possibility of endless sequels. So Nashawaty is a former critic for Entertainment Weekly, and he writes with the enthusiasm of a fan, and also his love for movies comes through. So he tells the story in a hugely entertaining way about how these forces, all these stunning forces, came together to combine to get these movies made. And also, it includes a lot of behind-the-scenes info, aka Dish, that I absolutely love. So I would recommend this book to any lover of movies.
It is The Future Was Now, Mad Men, Mavericks, and the Epic Sci-Fi Summer of 1982 by Chris Nashawaty. All right.
I'm going to take 12-year-old boy again for 200.
Yes. ding, ding.
So Edward Burns, the filmmaker, has written a book that, again, so this is a novel, but are there shades of his life and autobiography and real things? Yes.
All reflections, sure.
Woven in. And it's very fun. So it starts out with the main character, who is 12 and turns 13 by the end. And it just goes through this very, very Long Island, New York City childhood of, you know, firemen and just kind of sort of rough Irish fun. They like go out to Montauk. It reads like a kind of sort of list of like 1980s, like things you did with your family kind of thing if you were from that New York region. The boy is a reader. They've kind of sort of pushed some books upon him, including Old Man and the Sea, which is one that he develops a love for, which is a book that I actually also really love, and I just like that. But it's very, very funny, and Ed is very personable in when you see him in interviews, and his movies have been great, and that just shines through in this writing also. And it you know, deals with marriage and all of it through the point of view of, like, a 12-year-old boy. So how a 12-year-old boy sees issues with siblings, like siblings who are, like, maybe going out and, like, not coming home or getting in trouble. And then also issues with the parents as they kind of struggle with their relationship and what it means. And a boy with his mother also. There's, like, a real love there and a real lens that he's put upon those older characters, especially her. So very enjoyable.
A Kid from Marlborough Road, a novel by Edward Burns.
I'm going to switch to fiction, too, right now, and this new one is The Life Impossible by Matt Haig. This comes out next Tuesday, the 3rd, and Matt Haig, of course, is the hugely popular writer of the hugely popular The Midnight Library, which has, you know, been living on the bestseller list for many, many months. This story has as its main character a woman named Grace Winters. She inherits a house from a long-lost old friend named Christina. This house is in Ibiza. Grace is retired. She's struggling day to day to get any joy out of life. And she's also living with a lot of shame and sadness from an event earlier in her life. So when she gets this notice, she buys a one-way ticket to Ibiza. And she's also interested in finding out what were the circumstances of Christina's death. So she feels compelled to search for an explanation. And but in doing so, she is going to have to reckon with her own past as well. So Grace goes to the house. She finds a letter from Christina in the house. And then she goes to seek out this man, Alberto, whom it seems Grace had some sort of closeness to. He takes her on a midnight dive into the Mediterranean, and she encounters something that she never could have dreamed of and which will change her life forever. So if that doesn't hook you, I don't know what will. It's a story of love and rebirth. And one of the wonderful effects that Matt Haig's books all have is that they force you to consider life from a new, original perspective. So this one is filled with wonder and adventure. And he also weaves elements of magical realism very deftly into his characters' lives. He also describes the people and the scenery and the waters of Ibiza in such a way that it creates this atmosphere in which it's very easy to begin to believe in magic.
The name of the new book is We Used to Live Here by Marcus Killiber.
It's The Life Impossible by Matt Haig.
My apologies.
That's okay.
I was looking at the book on your... yes. The name of the book is The Life Impossible by Matt Haig, which does not come out until next Tuesday.
Correct.
But it'll be out, and it'll be huge.
It will be.
Oh, it will
be a big, big deal. The Life Impossible by Matt Haig. All right.
I really also love Matt Haig's book before that, the one, the time travel one. How to Stop Time. Love that
book. I
think
that's at least as good as The Midnight Library.
I think they both offer so much.
Me too.
You use the word deftly.
Yes.
So now I'm gonna riff off that to go to Volume Control, which is a book, Hearing in a Deafening World. I know that's not the word you were using, but this is by David Owen, and I just heard about this book 2 weeks ago. We were at dinner or somewhere with people, and somebody was talking about this, and it comes from that terrible would you rather question, like, would you rather be deaf or blind? Oh. And everybody always says deaf, but it turns out, I think that's apparently the wrong answer, because hearing loss is much more isolating than blindness in a way, supposedly, but David Owen makes a very good case for that, though that's not exactly the case he's trying to make. He's just really talking about hearing and what it is, and then what happens, and what happens when it goes awry, and happens as people get older. And I think that there's an unbelievable importance of remembering what is happening to all the people around you, both as they get older, who you know, and people who you don't know. And, you know, even when people come into the bookstore and I say something and it's not loud enough and they say, excuse me, like, I make so sure to speak really clearly and enunciate and look at them in the eye. when you can't hear things or you miss a few words, it's really devastating, but it's also really fascinating sound, and also what we can do to protect ourselves now, even when we don't think about it. So I just think this book is helpful and interesting and ticks all those boxes. So there you go.
Volume Control by David Owen is the name of the book. All right.
Back to nonfiction, I have Art Heist, 50 Artworks You Will Never See by Susie Hodge. And this is a fascinating investigation into 50 different artworks that over time have been stolen and never recovered, as well as some others that were taken and later found. And it's one of those books that once you pick it up, you will go down a rabbit hole that will eat up large chunks of your time. Because you can't put it down. And the chapters are not very long. They are, you can pick the book up anywhere and read any segment of it. And it is just totally engrossing. So Susie Hodge has done meticulous research, and she writes in a very engaging and accessible style that she uncovers these mysteries surrounding the thefts of these priceless works of art. You have Michelangelo, you have Rembrandt, Van Gogh, Cezanne, Vermeer, and many others. And she describes how each of them was stolen, and in some cases why they were stolen, and the attempts to recover them, which many of which are still ongoing, the Isabella Stewart Gardner being the most famous of those.
Right.
And the leads and the suspects. And even though you will never see most of these artworks again in person, the book is richly illustrated with reproductions of them, as well as many photographs surrounding the investigations. So if you are a lover of art or true crime or mystery or any combination of those, you will love this book. It's absolutely amazing.
Art Heist, 50 Artworks You Will Never See by Susie Hahn.
Right. Well, if you are incarcerated for stealing some of those artworks, you do not have access to many books of your choice, and you also don't have access to the internet. And if you are incarcerated in New York State, you can only receive one or two personal packages a year. Mm-hmm. So we partner with Books Beyond Bars, and one of the books that is most requested by people who are incarcerated in New York is, and probably other places too, is the World Almanac and Book of Facts. And this is the 2024 I have with me. And basically, like, if you are in a prison, you don't have access to the internet, you don't know things. So people can look at this atlas and see, like, how big countries are and what the weather's been and famous people who have died that year and, like, the population and presidents and there's history and there's just so much. And I think we forget sometimes what we have easy access to that other people do not.
You know, when I was incarcerated, I mean, growing up in the 80s, this is all we had.
I know.
This was it, right?
Right, because you couldn't Google anything.
Right. This is where you looked out to see who won the 100-meter medley relay in 1976, right, or 1960, and sports records and TV shows and oh my God, the obituaries. They're like, really, that person died? I didn't know. I thought they were still alive. President biographies. My goodness, I this book, we lived on this book.
I mean, it has so much in it. And
but what I'm thrilled is it hasn't really changed.
No, it hasn't.
The format's pretty much the same.
Oh, and that is really cool.
And our partnership with Books Beyond Bars really lets us help them buy exactly the books that people are requesting. But actually, there's no place for people in prison even to, like, look through a list of books or look on websites to see what books are available. So there's this very interesting thing where similar books get requested, but then we're always trying to help when someone asks for a book on a certain subject to, like, get some new books in there, just because people also pass them around and share. So
that is a wonderful program.
We really love it.
I'm going to check that
the
out.
The World Almanac and Book of Facts 2024. It is now out. Okay, we have about 3 minutes, so make the best
of it. So I'm going to talk about this beautiful picture book, and I don't feel like radio is the best medium for being enthusiastic about picture books, but this one is so spectacularly beautiful, and we are going to be having this author-illustrator, Caitlin Freibel, at our store on Saturday, September 28th from 1 to 2:30 p.m. So this is gorgeous watercolors that tell a playful story, or that illustrate a playful story of all these woodland creatures. You've got a chipmunk, a bear, a moose, a beaver, a fox and squirrel, a loon. They're all scurrying to prepare for the change in season. And I'm just going to show you and you some of these amazing pictures. They're all beautiful.
Whoa. Watercolor.
Gorgeous.
They're beautiful.
Now that's a moose. Look at that.
Yeah, that sleeping fox.
Oh, they're just so beautiful. I love the kind of jewel-like colors. And, you know, it just sort of broadcasts a love of nature. And it's kind of a reminder for us to, like, really stop and look at the beauty around us.
Yeah, now, that is a cute porcupine. You can't let people go near porcupines, but they're cute, cute porcupines.
But, I mean, this is just
the watercolors
so beautiful.
They're beautiful. Very fall colors.
So, you know, it's kind of a gentle reminder to all of us to look a little deeper into the nature all around us, and a perfect gift for the special kid in your life, but also for you.
October is having a party. Yes, it is. All right, Kira.
And a perfect reminder to go back to authors who have been published many, many years ago with perhaps new editions. So I have James Baldwin, Giovanni's Room, which is a really beautiful love story and somebody finding out who he is himself. There's a lot of drama that goes on and some really, really sad parts. But James Baldwin would have turned 100, and we have all of his books being republished with really great, beautiful editions, hardcover and softcover.
Oh, that's a beautiful edition.
Yeah.
I read this for the first time last year. It's an incredible book. What an amazing novel.
You know, to find yourself in a love story and to find things, you know, for every different kind of person, you know, as me as a kind of, you know, person who grew up in a very different time period in a very different way.
Right.
And to still find matters of the heart put so beautifully in exactly how I feel. It's amazing.
I know this is stupid, but I was reading this. I was like, oh, that's why he's a literary master. Like, I get it now.
That is not stupid. plus, it was a very transgressive book for its time.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's amazing.
He was very bold in writing it.
All right. What have you got there, Lily?
So the last one I'm going to talk about is a horror story called We Used to Live Here by Marcus Klewer. And this is a, I'm going to just say it is a genuinely terrifying read. this young couple, Charlie and Eve, they buy houses, rehab them, they flip them, and they've just gotten a great deal on this kind of dilapidated house in an otherwise lovely neighborhood. One day they're working on the house, a knock comes at the door, and this is the point at which any reasonable person yells at Eve, stand away from the door.
Yeah.
But she's a people pleaser, so she answers the door, and there's a man there and his kids and his wife. He tells her that as a boy he lived in the house and he wants to show his wife and kids around.
That
well,
old trick.
That's how they get you every time.
Needless to say, inexplicable weird things start happening as soon as they come in. Then the youngest child disappears. A ghostly presence manifests in the basement. But then the worst thing is these people can't seem to take a hint that their visit is over and they need to leave. And then Charlie disappears. And Eve just is like, is it me? Am I imagining this? But she's clearly losing her grip on reality. So it is genuinely terrified and filled with the kind of creeping dread that makes you want to put it down, but it's too late and you can't. But you've been warned, and Netflix has optioned this as a movie starring Blake Lively.
All right. Well, we are out of time. Far from being people that we don't want you two to leave, but unfortunately, we're out of time. So I will remind you that you can go to meritbooks.com or opendoor-bookstore.com to find out more information about these wonderful bookstores. All of our book picks posted online, wamc.org/roundtable. Kira Wisner, Lily Bartels, thank you so much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thank you, Joe.
As always.
Thanks, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.